Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Over the years, we've broached the subject of religion and psychology more than once. I'm always interested in how the beliefs and practices of faith adherents affects their mental and emotional well-being, for better or otherwise. While we've investigated other paths, we've never explored this field in the realm of Hinduism. Recently, a friend of mine shared her doctoral dissertation with me. It's entitled Hindu-Indian-American Mental Health. It occurred to me that this would make for excellent conversation here on Common Threads, so here we are. Let me share some things about our guest, Kavita Palod Seksaria. She is a second-generation Hindu-Indian-American who is very active in her community. She received her Ph.D. in clinical psychology from Rutgers University and now has her own practice, KPS Psychotherapy in Maryland, but serves clients around the country through telemedicine. You can find out more at www.kpspsychotherapy.com. So we welcome to Common Threads, Kavita Palod Seksaria. Hello, Kavita.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. This is very exciting.
Well, good. I'm glad we're fulfilling a part of your life. Listen, why don't you start up by telling us about your upbringing and what inspired you to go into this field? Was there anything about being raised? You are a second generation Indian American and Hindu American. Was there anything that inspired you from your background, specifically that part of your background?
Absolutely. So there's, you know, two pieces to this. I grew up with a father who was really passionate about making sure that we actually understood what Hinduism was, which, you know, the more I think about it, the more credit I give him, because it's so different from the way that he was raised. He grew up in India, so he was kind of immersed in it. I don't think anyone, you know, really took the time to answer the questions about why do we do this or what is the significance of this, because you were just immersed in it at that time. But he wanted to do something different for us, recognizing that we were growing up in a different context where we weren't immersed the way we were. So if we were going to own these things and practice these things, then we had to build our own connections to them. And so I have a lot of fond memories, like, you know, coming home from school and crying because kids had made fun of my lunch being vegetarian and they just didn't get it. And he didn't, you know, just say, well, this is how it is. He took me to a PETA meeting and he said, you know, this is why we care. This is why we're vegetarian. And this connects to our faith because we don't believe in violence. And I always thought that was really cool. And I've, you know, been a fervent vegetarian since then. So that's my connection to Hinduism, is one that's really been fought and challenged and pushed so that it's my own. And then there's the piece of always knowing that there were people in my life who were struggling, who didn't seem to understand or appreciate that there was more help and that things didn't have to be as hard as they looked. So even, you know, with family that's at times really educated and have medical backgrounds and stuff, just seeing that it felt so hard to be able to access mental health services, to be able to access the kind of help that can really, I've found since I started school, change lives in such beautiful ways. And I really felt like maybe there was a translation problem there, an understanding problem about what mental health can be, what therapy can be, and that maybe going in with my background and my understanding, I'd have a better chance of helping people understand that this can be a really beautiful thing.
So you're saying that the people you saw who were challenged in some way mentally and emotionally, these people were primarily Indian Hindu Americans, not just the general population.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely the general population is suffering in a lot of ways, Fred. But I think outside of, you know, my Hindu Indian community, I just felt like I was seeing more people reaching out, more people being okay with getting help, more people showing that, like, accepting help could be transformative versus the attitudes and the, you know, the hesitance that I was seeing in our community.
In the old days, and by old days I'm talking about early 20th century, religion seems to have been portrayed as the villain, right? Especially with Freud. He seemed to think that religion could never be the answer to anyone's emotional or psychological problems, but it was most likely the cause of it. I'm assuming that you studied that part of the history of psychology and psychotherapy, and I'm wondering if you have seen the growth of acceptance of religion, not only as a matter of fact that it exists, but also that it can be used to help people grow in their emotional stability.
Absolutely. You know, I think this is something the field is still working on, but I do think there's this huge difference in being able to practice in 2020 than there was in, you know, 1920. And I think that there's more and more acceptance that religion can offer healing in ways beyond just blind belief or, you know, just not taking accountability or leaving everything up to God, like some of these real misconceptions that I think people used to have about religion, right? The sense that, oh, it's just not scientific and we need to really abide by that which we can see and understand with our senses. And lately, I think people have become, you know, certainly very accepting of dialectics and mindfulness, which of course have a very spiritual history, in recognizing that they can actually do what they want, which is empirically see with their eyes, that being connected to something bigger than us can be a source of strength and resilience and coping in a way that's really important to be able to recognize. Now, are we all the way there at acceptance? Absolutely not. You know, when I was doing my research, I was talking to some Hindu American psychologists as well, and they really shared a hesitance to bring spirituality into their work because of not because they had ever been told not to do so, but because there was this, you know, just sense that it wasn't empirical or that we needed to focus on evidence-based treatment. But the more that we talked and the more I've continued talking to people, you know, I recognize that more and more people are okay with, you know, asking that question in an intake of, you know, what is your religion? What is your relationship to religion, to faith, to spirituality, to understand that it can be something that can be a real tool in addition to the work that they're already doing.
It's interesting to think that Freud had this concept of religion, which was pretty much negative, but the people he saw, I'm going to make an assumption here, and I have no idea if it's credible, but I'm going to guess that Freud's patients were either Christian or Jewish, and that he did not have any exposure to the Dharmic religions. So he may have never had a Hindu patient or a Buddhist patient or, you know, an American Indian spiritualist, anything like that. And I'd be curious to know what he would have thought if he had more exposure, but that's something we'll probably never know unless you're going to tell me that, oh, there's this whole body of work that I'm not aware of.
No, so as far as I also know, and I won't claim to be an expert or someone who's dug deeply into Freud's life or Freud's work, he did work with mostly Christian and Jewish patients. But, you know, you look at Carl Jung, who was very influenced by Freud's ideas, but then also went on to really dive into Dharmic faiths, and you see the ways that has influenced his understanding of the work, and you wonder about the potential there.
Do you have any colleagues that are doing something similar to you, whom you know? That is to say, someone who might be Jewish and attempting to do the same kind of thing in their community, or people who are Christian psychotherapists or Buddhist psychotherapists or whatever. Have you had any contact with anybody that sounds like that?
So I haven't had direct contact, no. But I've, you know, heard things and seen things as I've done my research that I find really inspiring. You know, I was just looking for some couple training the other day, and I realized I had a whole guide on how to work specifically with Muslim couples and how to use the hadith to do that, which I thought was really cool. But of course, you know, also felt the loss because that was certainly lacking for my faith and a lot of the people that I would love to be able to serve. But I think there, you know, there's a whole Muslim mental health conference, which I think is really inspiring. And absolutely, I know there's a lot of work with Christian psychoanalysts, Christian psychotherapists that are really working on understanding the interplay there. I'm not as familiar about Judaism, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to hear that there was a thriving field.
I would expect that there is. So clearly you don't market yourself as just a psychotherapist for Hindus. Obviously you'll treat anybody that you feel that you can be of help to, correct?
Absolutely. Yes. I think I would have a hard time seeing as many people as I'd like to if I didn't consider myself really open to working with anyone who has who's looking to find ways to feel like a better version of themselves, to feel more aligned between where they are and where they want to be.
Mm-hmm. So what do you see in the Hindu Indian American population that might differ from the rest of the American population in terms of psychology, health, and treatment?
I think I see, and this is backed up by the research that has been done, though I would like to see a lot more, that you see more somatization. You see more people, though this is not entirely unique to Hindu Indian Americans, but you do tend to see more people talking to their medical doctor and recognizing that some of the things they're dealing with may not entirely have only physical roots, and then finding their way to being able to consider therapy. There can be a lot of guilt on using precious resources on something that feels so foreign, feels you know, like it's dismissing the power of the family and friends they have, etc. I think those are the two big things that I see that I think are really important, even though, like I'm saying, a lot of people feel those things.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. My guest today is Kavita Palod Siksaria, and we're talking about her dissertation, Hindu Indian American Mental Health. So, Kavita, do you notice a significant difference between Indian Muslims, Christians, Hindus, non-Indian Hindus. You know what I'm saying? So let's say you have three patients. One of them is a first-generation Hindu-Indian-American. Another patient is a first-generation Indian Muslim. And then a third patient could be somebody who was born here in the United States, is not Indian, but has adopted Hindu Dharma as their particular path. But actually, for right now, let's worry about that non-Indian for in a little bit. But let's talk about an Indian Muslim, Indian Christian. All right. Don't they all share so much of the same culture that they sort of all speak the same language? Do you know? Do you understand where I'm going?
Absolutely. You're 100% right. There's so much shared culture there, and a lot of the challenges that you see are really similar. It's finding the idea of therapy to be foreign. I've been told that it definitely feels like a, you know, quote unquote white people or even affluent people thing, that they may feel shame for struggling because they are here in this country and they worked so hard to be strong and to not need any more help than they're already getting, etc. There's certainly a lot of those themes that are really, really in common, especially when you're talking about anyone who's immigrated here to the United States from the subcontinent.
And then what about, have you had any experience treating someone who, again, is not Indian, grew up in American culture? Maybe to them, growing up, religion was church once a week and make sure they saw the Brady Bunch. You know, that, and then they, somewhere along the line in their adulthood, perhaps they might embrace Hindu Dharma. I would gather that treating somebody like that would be vastly different from treating someone who would be considered a co-religionist, right? Somebody who is Hindu but came from a very traditional Indian culture.
Yeah, I can't say I've had the privilege or honor of working with anyone who fits that description, unfortunately. But I do agree that I think it would be really different. And probably the ideas around therapy would likely be different. It may be more acceptable. Maybe if they've done the work to explore faith, then they're inherently more likely to be okay with exploring the idea of sitting with someone and reflecting with someone on what they're looking for and what their values are.
My experience, say in the last couple of decades, is that people who are born in America, people who are really raised in our culture, are so much less afraid of other people knowing that they are in therapy. I have several friends in therapy, and you know, over the years, many friends and family in therapy, and it just seems that they're talking about it the way they would talk about going to see their physician because of a broken bone. Do you agree with that? That there is just so much less stigma these days in American culture.
I agree. And I think, you know, I'd be curious what you think about this, Fred, but I think, like, as you look at generations, even in this country, you'll see a difference. And you'll see that it may not be kind of a uniform, widespread effect, but certainly there is more and more growing acceptance. And sometimes that, you know, also percolates upwards, where you have kids who are able to normalize it for their parents because it's so acceptable to them. And so, yeah, I mean, I love to hear when it feels just as you know, necessary and just as healing as going to a doctor because you've sprained your leg. You know, a lot of times I like to think of therapy, you know, psychotherapy, more like physical therapy than necessarily going to a doctor, because, you know, in physical therapy, you're going and you have a guide and you're getting help, but you're also doing a lot of the work yourself, rather than kind of being dependent on someone to just tell you what to do or to just administer the healing. But I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I think you're right too, to qualify that it's generational, because I am sure my mother, rest her soul, she was the type of person who would whisper the word cancer when talking about somebody who may be going through that affliction, and I'm sure that she would also be somebody to whisper if somebody was going through any sort of psychotherapy. You are correct. When I was thinking of my friends, I was thinking of people who are, you know, say under 80, that might be in therapy right now. One time, Kavita, I heard, I believe it was an Indian American comedian, and if it wasn't a comedian, it was somebody who was just funny. And he said, what he was saying is that unlike Americans, when Americans go to therapy, and this is a stereotype, of course, they lie on a couch and they blame their parents. He said that Indians can't do that because they're raised in joint families and there are too many people to blame. So I'm just wondering if you see the truth in that, if the closeness of Asian families in general, not just Indian, but Asian families in general, how have you seen that affect mental health? I'm guessing that it can work for you or not, depending on the families.
Exactly. It's so complicated, and it really depends on how the person is taking it, right? Even within the same family, one person may feel so supported and, you know, comforted by feeling the closeness there, and their younger sibling may feel stifled by it. So there's a lot of factors that affect how that support is read. And, you know, this is why I think that having Asian therapists and South Asian therapists and Hindu therapists is so important, because it takes a lot of listening and understanding and relating to be able to do that work of really understanding how those relationships are actually impacting someone, you know, because if you've never had a frame to understand the love and support that come in the closeness and the, you know, tight supervision with which, you know, some Asian tiger moms may operate, then you may be quick to jump to finding it oppressive or encouraging your client to, you know, to need to set boundaries, to need to be assertive and do their own thing, versus being able to really listen to figure out, like, where is the distress? Is it because, you know, truly they're feeling like they need some space to be able to be their own selves, or is it because they need to work on this relationship to understand that this is an expression of love that needs to be, you know, stated more concretely so that they can accept it rather than some other complicated feelings that may arise. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I probably should have defined joint families for some people. Now, I don't believe that you have this anywhere near what you have in India, where in India you have compounds, you have very large homes with multiple generations living in them. And you don't really have that here, but at the same time, you often have families that are in extremely close proximity. It's the closest thing to a joint family. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. You'll still see people living with their in-laws, or, you know, a street down, you'll still see people who, you know, it's not that they're living together, but there's this philosophy or this belief that, like, absolutely, my aunt can call you anytime and ask you about that. Absolutely, she can keep, you know, suggesting you do this about that pesky, you know, mold that's bothering you or whatever it is, because we have that closeness and we have that relationship, which can be, of course, a struggle at the same time, like you were sharing, you know?
Yes. Yes, I understand that. Kavita, we are running out of time for this particular episode of Common Threads, but I'm enjoying our conversation, and I hope that you'll be able to join us next week and we can continue it.
Absolutely. I would love that.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today has been Dr. Kavita Palod-Seksaria, and we've been talking about her dissertation, Hindu-Indian American Mental Health. Please join us again next week here on WGVU's Common Threads.